WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
All right, Tuscaloosa, welcome to the student section. I'm your host, Ada McGuirk, joined by, as always, Rennell Foreman. Got a lot of football to talk. Obviously, a disappointing weekend for Alabama football fans. But before we get there, we have an interesting Monday night football matchup. The Baltimore Ravens travel to New Orleans to take on the Saints. This will be an interesting game tonight. Andy Dalton has been named the official starter not only for tonight, but for the remainder of the season by head coach Dennis Allen. Jameis Winston was the starter starting the season, got hurt. Andy Dalton comes in. He's operating the offense at a decently high level, and it seems like the Saints are just going to roll with him. Mark Andrews is out in this game for the Ravens, as well as Rashard Bateman. Bateman is the leading receiver for the Baltimore Ravens. Michael Thomas, the number one receiver for the New Orleans Saints, is out for the rest of the season with, I believe it is, a Lisfranc injury. I'm not 100% certain. Jarvis Landry, the slot corner for the New Orleans Saints, also in at, well, questionable tonight. So we will see what wide receiver core the Saints field tonight. It is a dislocated second toe on his right foot, and it seems like he is having some issues with the recovery process post-surgery. And Jarvis Landry is questionable with an ankle injury tonight. So Chris Olave looks like he will be the number one guy for the Saints. Now, in the past, the Saints have kind of struggled with the quarterback run game, in particular against Lamar Jackson. For those of you who don't know, Sean Payton, longtime Saints head coach, is now a member of the media, like us here. And in his show today, where he joined Colin Cowherd on The Herd for Fox, he said that the Saints, under Sean Payton's leadership and under defensive coordinator Dennis Allen, have struggled with Lamar Jackson's running ability. So it'll be interesting to see what happens tonight, as Dennis Allen is now the head coach of the New Orleans Saints. I believe Baltimore is a -1.5 point favorite to win this game. The ESPN matchup predictor has them at a 53.7% chance to win, so that's a tight spread. I believe the Baltimore Ravens bring in Roquan Smith, one of the top tacklers in the country at that middle linebacker position from Chicago, trying to shore up that defense that has been a little leaky, not so great with holding on to big leads. I think the Ravens get it right tonight, and I think that they win and cover. What about you, Rennell?
Yeah, I don't see New Orleans Saints doing too much. I just think they're not really a good team right now, and I'm not sure that change with Andy Dalton is going to do any difference. The Ravens are hungry. They have some more to play for in terms of they're in the race. And a lot of teams, especially in the AFC, are looking on at that division and thinking that these guys aren't as good as they once were, but the Ravens are still a very, very good team. The Bengals are still a solid team. These are not teams that are just jokes and they're easy W's on any schedule. So we'll see. I think the Ravens should handle business, and I don't really see much like trouble for the Ravens.
Yeah, I will say if the Saints win tonight, I believe that they will tie with Tampa and Atlanta, and they will be in a three-way tie for number one in the NFC South division, if I'm not mistaken. But don't quote me on that. But that is something to keep in mind. So if you are watching this game tonight, this obviously has big implications for both teams, but could be potentially setting up New Orleans for a run at the win of their division. Speaking of the Falcons, unfortunately they lost yesterday to the Los Angeles Chargers off a last-second field goal by Cameron Dicker, Dicker the Kicker, as I heard him called yesterday. But the Atlanta Falcons still very well could win this division, with Carolina struggling in a rebuild, New Orleans having some issues, and of course Tampa Bay having some woes as well, offensively and defensively. Tampa Bay did win yesterday versus the defending Super Bowl champions, the LA Rams. I don't know if you saw that game or not, but man, Tom Brady, he looked almost relieved to win this one. They won 16-13. Neither team's offense looked great. I initially thought the Rams, because both teams had a leaky offensive line, they bring in Aaron Donald, the wrecking force that he is. I just felt like they would have enough defensively to overwhelm the Bucks and Tom Brady, but you can never bet against the GOAT. And, you know, Vita Vea for the Bucks, he ended up kind of being that dominant defensive lineman on the inside and wrecked a lot of what the Rams were trying to do offensively. So props to Vita Vea, and props to Tom Brady for ending the longest losing streak of his career. That is, it's pretty crazy to think about, you know, Tom Brady coming back, expect big things from him, and, happens to have one of the worst starts to his career. A three-game losing streak there. It's also, I think, just goes to show you how good Tom Brady is, right? You say, hey, this is the worst losing streak of your career. It's three games in a row, man. That's pretty impressive. Yeah. The Philadelphia Eagles took on the Houston Texans in a Thursday night football game, and they have remained undefeated. They took down the Houston Texans 29-17. I gotta say, this was kind of a sloppy performance by the Philadelphia Eagles. It was tied at the half. And, well, ultimately, Philadelphia, like all great teams, played a poor game, but they still won, right? And I think that's a testament to how good Philly really is, that they can play not their best game, but still walk away with a win. Granted, against the Houston Texans, who are 1-6-1 right now, but the Houston Texans played their butts off, and Philadelphia still walks away with the win here. Jalen Hurts had 2 touchdowns on the day passing. It was a kind of a close game. Actually, the Houston Texans outrushed the Philadelphia Eagles, which, if you had told me that before the game, I would not have believed you. Damian Pierce, the rookie out of Florida, man, he's running well. 27 carries for 139 yards, and averaging a little over 5 yards per carry. That is pretty awesome for the rookie there out of Florida. He fell a lot in the draft, too. So it's interesting to see him doing what he is doing. Detroit upset the Green Bay Packers. You know, listen, I'm glad Detroit got a win. I like Dan Campbell. He's a guy that's easy to root for. I just felt like they needed the win. And, well, they did. They held the Packers to a little over 100 yards on the ground. When you look at the numbers here, Aaron Rodgers, 23 of 43 for 291 yards and touchdown, but he had 3 interceptions. So not great for Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, not great. He didn't play a clean game. Alan Lazard, their leading receiver, only 87 yards. They are throwing it to many different people, but it just feels like they didn't bring in a wide receiver before the trade deadline. There were some to be had, and I don't know why they continue to refuse to go out and get proven commodities and spend money on weapons. We've seen it time and time again. You have to have weapons to compete in this game. You look at Cincinnati, they were a bad team, even with Joe Burrow. What happens? They get Ja'Marr Chase, and they have Ja'Marr Chase and Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins. They have a great receiving core, and they are the runner-ups in the Super Bowl. The Rams, they have Cooper Kupp. He's doing great things. They need a little extra, so they go out and get Odell Beckham Jr. They have two true number one receivers. They win the Super Bowl. When you look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, when they won the Super Bowl, Antonio Brown, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, they had a plethora of great receiving options. And it just feels like in this day and age, you have to have elite receiver play in order to be competitive, and they just don't have that. So, Rennell, I mean, is this a wash of a season at this point for the Green Bay Packers? How concerned should we be for them?
Yeah, I think the it's getting close to that point. You know, they have to get some wins going. Next game is a big one. Back at Lambeau against the Dallas Cowboys, who are 6-2. Not that the Cowboys are, you know, unbeatable, but you know, they don't have any good receivers. They targeted Lazard 10 times. He only caught the ball 4 times. Tanyan wasn't involved as he usually is. Detroit's defense came to play. Aaron Rodgers kept throwing, turning the ball over within their 20 in the red zone. And so now it's bad. It's getting to the point where they can't really lose anymore, you know. And that's a problem. And it sucks because it's honestly all the Vikings division. The Vikings should not lose that division unless they have a complete, utter, just failure toward the end of the season now. So, I mean, you know, I don't know what they're going to have to do, but like as of right now, when you think about what Aaron Rodgers is doing without Devontae Adams and what Devontae Adams is doing without Aaron Rodgers, not saying that Devontae Adams is having, you know, he's been playing very well, but if he had Aaron Rodgers, I'm sure they'd still be connecting very well. But it seems like Devontae Adams is doing a lot better without Aaron Rodgers. And Aaron Rodgers, you can see even all over social media, all during the game, him slamming the telephone call, slamming it down. Like, he's frustrated. He knows that he needs to be playing better.
Yeah. Talking about Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams, you know, Aaron Rodgers has been flirting with retirement a lot, and he's not shy to do that publicly. And if you're an elite receiver, you know, you want stability at the quarterback position. And Aaron Rodgers is one of the best of all time, and his connection with Devontae Adams is in the, you know, arguably one of the better connections between a quarterback and a receiver of all time. But you got to have stability. So Devontae Adams leaves. He goes to the Raiders to play with his former college quarterback and Derek Carr. While he might be playing well, you know, yesterday they played the Jaguars. He caught 10 balls for 146 yards and 2 touchdowns. So great performance, but they did lose to the Jaguars 20-27, and the Raiders are 2-6 on the season under Josh McDaniels, and it's his first year as the Las Vegas Raiders head coach. I don't know, should we be concerned about Josh McDaniels and the job that he's doing at the Raiders?
I don't think so. I think that coming in, he had a tough battle. He's going against these great teams, had a great division. Not to say that they are all living up to their potential, but coming into this season, preseason, I thought that was going to probably be the best division in football. Anytime you got to play the Kansas City Chiefs twice in a year, you know, that juggernaut, that's going to lead to problems. And the Raiders, you know, they've had some up and downs, but I don't think that they should give up on McDaniels and give up on the organization or even Derek Carr. I'm not saying Derek Carr is the answer, but one thing he does do is he slings the ball, and he's not afraid to go out there and throw the ball. They're going to have to figure something out. You know, you can't be 3-2-6 in this league and it'd just be okay, but more time.
I will say, though, that this offense that Josh McDaniels is bringing in to Las Vegas, first off, the offensive line for Las Vegas is not great to bad. It's hard to win games when your offensive line isn't very good. I mean, here, Josh Jacobs had 17 carries for 67 yards. Alabama fans know how good Josh Jacobs is. It's not his fault. I think the offensive line just can't get push, unfortunately. And Josh McDaniels is bringing in an incredibly complicated offense. You hear players from the Patriots organization where he was the offensive coordinator. It's a complicated offense, and he wants to run the same offense because it is a good and effective offense, but it's going to take some time for these guys to fully adjust, and I think next season we're going to see a different-looking Raiders team. You know, I was there with you. I thought this would be the best division in football, the AFC South. It is, the AFC West. Thought it would be the best division in football. The Raiders are woefully underachieving. The Broncos are underachieving. The Chargers are 5-2, and of course the Chiefs are one of the top, you know, three teams in football. Speaking of the Chiefs, they won last night against the Malik Willis-led Titans, Willis starting in place of an injured Ryan Tannehill. Preseason, there was a lot of hype around Malik Willis potentially coming in and taking Ryan Tannehill's job. I think that he showed he is not ready to be a full-time starter in this league. Derrick Henry was great. The Chiefs win it in overtime, 22-17. Malik Willis was... are you serious? Are you ready for this? He was 5 of 16 for 80 yards and no touchdowns. As a starting quarterback in the NFL, if you throw for 5 passes and 80 yards, you are not winning that game. And I'm honestly impressed that they were in this game and they took it to overtime when your quarterback doesn't even throw for 100 yards. Derrick Henry had 17 carries and 115 yards for just under 7 yards per carry and 2 touchdowns. King Henry is still dominating the NFL. What's scary to me is when you look at the catches, Dante Hilliard had a catch. He's a running back. Austin Hooper had 2 catches. He's a tight end. Hassan Haskins had a catch. He's a running back. And Okonkwo, that's how you say it, had 1 catch. And I believe he is also a tight end, yes. So not one wide receiver for the tight end for the Titans caught a single pass in this game. Very strange. You know, when you would tell some people that stat, hey, the Titans, they're not going to throw for 100 yards, they're only going to throw for 5 passes, and their wide receivers won't catch a single one, it'll all be running backs and tight ends, I would think the Chiefs would blow them out of the water. But no, the Titans' defense, man, they are for real. They bullied the Kansas City Chiefs' offensive line, and unfortunately, they just did not have the offensive production to match it. Miami Dolphins beat the Chicago Bears in an offensive thriller. Tua's playing fantastic football right now. I think anybody who doubted Tua right now is having to eat their words. Miami has won, I believe, 6 games at this point. And all six wins have come under Tua Tagovailoa. They're 6-3. The only 3 losses they've had is when Tua was injured and not playing the full game. So, just goes to show you how much of an impact Tua Tagovailoa is having. Seattle and Minnesota continue to look good. Minnesota took down the Washington Commanders 22-17 in a close game. And Seattle beat the Arizona Cardinals 31-21. I am impressed with the job that Kevin O'Connell is doing in Minnesota. And I am more impressed with the job that Pete Carroll and Geno Smith are doing in Seattle. Arizona is a bad team right now, and I do not expect Cliff Kingsbury to be the head coach next season. All right, we're going to get into the college football happenings this weekend. We got to talk about the unfortunate Alabama loss down in Death Valley when we return.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
All right, and welcome back to the student section. When we left off, we're talking a little NFL football. Got some breaking news here that happened over the weekend. Actually, I think it happened today. The Indianapolis Colts are going to part ways with head coach Frank Reich. Frank has served under the Colts as their head coach and offensive play caller since, I believe, 2019, the year that Andrew Luck decided to unexpectedly retire. So, moving on from Frank Reich, you know, I honestly thought Frank was a good head coach. I'm not going to lie. I think that they've struggled to find the quarterback. When you look at what they've had, they've, you know, Jacoby Brissett had to start for them after Andrew Luck retires right before the season. They bring in Phillip Rivers and they make it to the playoffs, and you're thinking, okay, here you go, Phillip Rivers retires. They bring in Carson Wentz, and Carson Wentz to me is, well, I think he's broken, man. That draft of Jalen Hurts and seeing Jalen Hurts come in and threaten his position, it's just, it's messed with Carson Wentz a lot. And he has not been the same ever since. And now trying with Matt Ryan, failed with Matt Ryan. They've benched him permanently and are now starting Sam Ehlinger, who is not having much success either. Having a lot of woes on the offensive line. You know, I just don't know. We shall see what happens. In the meantime, Jeff Saturday... Yes, that Jeff Saturday, who's on television, he has been named the interim head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. Jeff Saturday, a Ring of Honor, phenomenal football player for the Indianapolis Colts during his time, played under Peyton Manning. He will step in. Jeff Saturday has been the head coach working in Georgia as a high school head football coach. He does not have experience coaching at the professional level or the collegiate level, so it'll be interesting to see. But he is regarded as a phenomenal leader. So, Jeff Saturday, the interim head coach for the Indianapolis Colts. All right, well, we got to get to it. Alabama traveled to LSU this Saturday to take on the Bayou Bengals, walk away with a loss 31-32 in overtime. Brian Kelly, you know, Alabama scores a touchdown in overtime, keep the field goal. The Tigers get it at their at our 25. Jalen Daniels runs it right in for a touchdown, and Brian Kelly elects to go for two, and our defensive back just could not stop their tight end enough, and ultimately they win 32-31. This is the second loss of the regular season and effectively knocks the Alabama Crimson Tide out of playoff contention. This is the first time since 2010 that Nick Saban has taken two losses before the Iron Bowl. I do not expect us to lose the Iron Bowl. That had some significance in the past where you never knew what would happen, but this year I feel pretty confident we could pretty easily beat the Auburn Tigers. So, there's a lot of bad when you look at this game. Bryce Young threw the ball 51 times. He was 25 of 51, so he was, you know, a 49% completion guy. Only one touchdown and a pick. We carried the ball 30 times for 137 yards. Auburn carried it 34 times for 185 yards. They had 5.4 yards per carry to our 4.6. Two touchdowns on the ground apiece for both teams. You know, we had 328 yards receiving. But man, it just, I don't know. The offensive line did not get the kind of push that it needed in the run game. And this is the first time I'm going to say, I think both offensive coordinators, both offense and defensive coordinators, will be fired at the end of the season. I think this is probably the last time we're going to see Pete Golding as our defensive coordinator, and more than likely the last time we're going to see Bill O'Brien as our offensive coordinator. When you look across the landscape of college football, you see a lot of teams improve, right? Oregon suffers a great loss. They're improving. They're getting better. USC, transfer portal, first year, only one loss on the season. They're improving and getting better. Georgia looks fantastic. LSU loses in week one to Florida State. They're improving. They're getting better. And Alabama, over the past two seasons, I mean, they just haven't looked like the Alabama of old, right? Under Bill O'Brien, offensively, we've had struggles. Really, struggles on the road, which is something that we used not to do. So I don't know. I have faith and confidence in head coach Nick Saban to get things right, but there is work to be done. You know, earlier today I heard conversations on the internet, on television, that the Saban dynasty is coming to an end. So, Rennell, I want to get your thoughts on this. Do you think the issues that this team is having, you know, some of this mental fortitude that they might not have compared to some of the other teams, do you think these are things that can be fixed? Or do you really think that we're seeing the Saban dominance begin to wane?
I don't think the dynasty's over. I think you gotta, when you look at a dynasty, you really gotta look at it. Dynasties, they begin slow and they evolve over time slow, and they also crash slow. It's like I heard a good analogy on this. It's like the tip of an iceberg, how it doesn't just completely fall down. It's like a slow burn process. The Bama dynasty is not over. And if it was over, we wouldn't see every time we lose teams running on the field like it's the end of the world, like they just won the national championship. So it's just a big win. You know, I think that Coach Saban has to deal with guys now. Not only do they make money now, but they also, this is a different age from the 2015, 2016 type of teams. Instagram, the social media world is a lot bigger. Haven't you noticed, as you've noticed over the few couple years, last couple years, we've had a lot more head cases. Jaleel Billingsley, Ajayi Hall, a lot more head case. Even Eli Ricks wasn't following protocol until recently, and I'm happy that he's on the field and doing well for himself. But a lot of guys, you know, are stuck in trying to show off, maybe flex, look the certain part, look the image, and now it's starting to show on the field. You know, you can't do these kind of things and think it's not going to work. And I'm not saying that they don't work hard on practice, but, you know, being a championship-level team is deeper than just what you do in practice when Coach Saban and all the coaches are watching and when they want you to do what they want you to do. When you go home that night, you have to make sure you're not doing other things, you know what I'm saying? You're not going to the bars, or you're not doing things that aren't going to make you successful. And I'm not someone to say that a player can't, you know, go out and have fun. But during the football season, if you really want to be what you want to be, you can't be doing that. And it's as simple as that. I think Death Valley, we play in a tough environment. These guys came ready to play and they punched us in the mouth. And when it's a close game, late in the game like that, they have all the advantage. They have all the fans there. They don't, you know, Jaden Daniels was playing very well. He was running when he had to, getting the ball out of his hands when he had to. You know, that's what happens. Our defense played pretty decently majority of the game. I mean, the final score is not going to reflect that, but our defense was playing very well. I just think there's a lot of things that need to happen. I think Bill O'Brien Bill O'Brien's never been a good coach. And people just assume because he was joining Alabama, the brand, that Bill O'Brien was just going to follow protocol, which he has to a certain extent, and just be successful because of that. But Bill O'Brien's never been a good coach. He even an offensive coach, he's been – Deshaun Watson carried him through that time period. I think maybe he was with, like, Penn State before then, which is a juggernaut. I mean, I'm not going to say it's easy to coach a juggernaut program, but – when you get to coach the Penn States of the world, you only really have to worry about an Ohio State loss and maybe a Michigan loss. You know, these teams in general, you go into Happy Valley, you lose. So, I mean, he just got exposed. I think our defense wasn't disciplined, and it showed. 12 players on the field on the last play of the game is ridiculous, and it happened twice, even after a timeout. That's ridiculous. That can't happen. And so Coach Saban's going to have to make some changes. It is what it is. It's a shame that you have a guy like Bryce Young on your team, and now national championship hopes, while not completely, the door's not completely shut, it's basically gloomy. It's probably very unlikely at this point.
Yeah. Well, I do want to mention, you know, that whole Penn State thing with Bill O'Brien. He did take over the program after they were suffering some severe penalties from the NCAA. The previous head coach had done several recruiting violations. So Bill O'Brien actually won the Bear Bryant Coach of the Year award while he was at Penn State. He was the offensive coordinator for New England while they had Tom Brady. I think he won a Super Bowl there as the offensive coordinator. He graduated from Brown, so he's an Ivy League educated guy. He won his division four times in a row while the Colts had Andrew Luck and the Titans had Derrick Henry. And I think when you look at his pedigree, he's not a terrible coach. And I think he is respected in the coaching profession. And I've heard people, you know, on chalk shows who are coaches say that. But I don't think the players on this team were comfortable enough with his whole playbook. And they weren't able to run all the plays that he wants to run. Keep in mind, Bryce Young has not practiced a full week of practice for 5 weeks in a row. Right after the Arkansas game, he didn't practice leading into the Texas A&M game, so that's 1 week of practice. He did not practice leading into the Tennessee game, that's 2 weeks. Leading into the Mississippi State game, that's three. Bye week is four, and he took limited reps this week going into the LSU game. So he had minimal practice, and I think that eventually caught up with him, right? He was off, and he did not connect well with his receivers. There was a lot of times where he was throwing to an open field and throwing to grass because one receiver was expecting to run a certain route, and he was expecting them to run a different route, and it ultimately looked discombobulated. Now, that is Bill O'Brien's job. He has to coach the offense, but I think that these players, because of how young some of our offensive pieces are, because Bryce Young has not been able to practice, he can't implement his full playbook. Regardless, I don't think he's brought enough creativity to this offense to keep him around. I think Pete Golding, he's been a good recruiter. He's been solid. I mean, even in this game, the defense gave up 24 points in regulation. If you're the Alabama Crimson Tide and your defense holds the other team to 24 points, surely the offense, since Lane Kiffin and the offensive overhaul that we've had over the years and the offensive juggernaut that we theoretically should become and should be, you can score 25 points in a game. And we could have had we kicked a extra point field and not gone for two twice in regulation. We would have been up. Will Reichard would have had an opportunity to kick a game-winning field goal, and this might have been a moot point here. But ultimately, I think there will be some changes. I think there will be a lot of changes on the support staff, people that we don't know, as just general Alabama football fans, as passionate as we are and as closely as we follow this program, I think there'll be a lot of people that we don't know of, support staffers, analysts, grad assistants, who move on and we bring in new people, because I think we need a refresh. We need to hit the refresh button on the Alabama program right now, because things are not looking great. And there is an outside shot. We would have to have several teams lose. We can't have an undefeated team. And you would have to have multiple teams lose twice for a two-lean team. And, you know, it's possible LSU still has to play Arkansas and Texas A&M. So if LSU were to lose both of those games, then Alabama would be in the SEC championship game ahead of LSU. At this point, I think it's unlikely that that happens. All right, the other big game in the SEC, Georgia and Tennessee. Wowza. That was quite a big game. I cannot wait to break that one down, so be sure to stick around and hear our thoughts on that game here on the student section.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
All right, and welcome back to the student section, leaving off with some college football. Georgia beats Tennessee. Man, it was not close, right? You watch this game, 27-13. I honestly think that the score kind of makes it seem a little closer than it was. Georgia owned this game. Stenson Bennett threw for 257 yards and two touchdowns. Tennessee, 42 carries and 94 yards on the team. They averaged 2.2 yards per carry. One of the things that the commentator said while we were listening to this game and watching this game that I thought was interesting, in Josh Heupel's tenure, as short as it has been at Tennessee, when teams have been able to stop his run attack, he's lost. So the key to beating the Josh Heupel offense is stop the run. And Georgia did that very effectively in this game, obviously holding the team to 94 yards. Conversely, Georgia ran the ball 37 times for 130 yards. Georgia, man, it pains me to say this. They look like the best program right now, not even the best team in the country, although they might be the best team in the country, but they just look like they're operating at a level that no other program is operating at right now. It was an interesting day. Georgia now 9-0 on the season. Looks like they may repeat the national title, have a shot at an SEC championship this year. They lost a lot of talent defensively, and a lot of the young guys that they have playing right now stepped up to answer the bell. Tennessee not out of it, though. They are 8-1. With the loss that Alabama suffered to LSU, I think it puts Tennessee in a good position. If they were to go undefeated the rest of the season and Georgia were to win the SEC championship as an undefeated SEC championship winner, then perhaps Tennessee could find a way to make it in. I really don't know what this says. If this says more about Georgia, more about Tennessee, you know, I think when you look at this, it's like, oh, right, Tennessee's only in their second year of Josh Heupel, and oh, right, Tennessee, they're still not there yet as one of these teams that can compete for a national title. But it's still on the table for them. So we shall see.
Mm-hmm.
But Georgia, they're looking pretty good. Tennessee's also helped out by the fact that Clemson got beat by Notre Dame. Again, not very close. Notre Dame, and this is interesting here. So Clemson was the number four team in the country. They go to South Bend. They play against Notre Dame. Notre Dame wins 35-14. Their quarterback, Drew Pine, kind of looked like Malik Willis. He threw for 9 passes and 85 yards in the touchdown. So they didn't even throw for 100 yards. And if you had told me before this game, hey, Aiden, Drew Pine, the quarterback for Notre Dame, yeah, he's not even going to throw for 100 yards on this Clemson defense, I would have picked Clemson all day. But it didn't matter. Why did it not matter? Well, because the Notre Dame rushing attack was absolutely fantastic. They ran for 263 yards on the ground, averaged over 5 yards per carry and 2 touchdowns. Conversely, Clemson ran the ball 25 times for only 90 yards. DJ threw an interception. Man, it was interesting. You know, Dabo Swinney, there was a lot of talk about whether or not Clemson deserved to be in that number four spot and in the playoffs. I said that they were like a number eight, number seven caliber team. Maybe now they're even outside the top 10. But Dabo Swinney, he loses Brent Venables, one of the best defensive coordinators in college football. loses Tony Elliott, a longtime offensive coordinator for him. Tony Elliott's now the head coach at Virginia. Brent Venables, the head coach at Oklahoma. And what does he do? Waste no time. Immediately promotes guys from within. Brandon Streeter, the quarterback coach, now the offensive coordinator. I forget the name of their defensive coordinator, but I think he was the defensive line coach, maybe. Something like that, who is now the defensive coordinator for the Clemson Tigers. And I think Dabo's in a similar situation to Nick Saban. What once was a top two, top three program in college football is looking shaky. And I think that it's partly because of the coaching staff. I think, like Alabama, you might be looking at both coordinators needing to move on. The question is, will Dabo move on from these guys, right? Dabo being the big family guy that he is, he promoted these guys from within. They've been on his staff for a long time. I just don't know if I can see him going to these guys after one season and say, hey, you know, I promoted you from within. You got one season, and that's all I'm going to give you. You got to go because I have to get a different coach.
Yeah.
I don't know. Could you see that happening, Rennell?
I don't think so. I don't think Dabo's going to do it just quite yet. I mean, their season's not even completely over either. They still can, you know, get to their goals of winning the conference. And honestly, that's all you can ask for, winning your conference and just having a chance for the committee to speak about you. So, I mean, that's just a terrible loss. Notre Dame is a really good organization. I'm happy for them. I'm happy that they got a win like this, considering that they had some bad losses this year, and it was big for Coach Freeman. Only time will tell with Clemson. They can still win. They can still win their conference. I'm not too sold on North Carolina. I know Mayo is in the Mayo. I don't know his last name, to be honest. But
Drake,
I know their
May.
Quarterback. Yeah. Their quarterback is in Heisman talks right now. So
playing
we
very
see.
Well. Yeah,
we will see.
Yeah, they beat Virginia 31-28. Clemson, yeah, I think that they are still in position to win the ACC title game, but it kind of felt like they were on the outside fringes, you know, even undefeated. They were ranked number 4, so the last team in. It just feels like they're probably not making it at this point in the season. So both teams, Alabama and Clemson, are at a crossroads here, and the moves in the offseason and what these two teams shape up into next season could kind of determine the trajectory of both of these programs, the Alabama Crimson Tide and the Clemson Tigers. And like you mentioned, yes, Notre Dame, 6-3 now. You know, they lost to Stanford, unfortunately. They lost to Marshall, unfortunately. But they've been doing, you know, decent things. They play Navy, you know, those military academies. They always run some weird offenses, some option offenses. So it'll be interesting to see how Marcus Freeman, a defensive-minded head coach, can handle that. They play Boston College, who's been not very good. And then the last weekend, hey, this will be good. You know, you'll have the Iron Bowl, you'll have the game between Michigan and Ohio State, and you'll also have USC versus Notre Dame, two blue bloods that have been sort of struggling to get back, fighting it out in the last season, last game of the season. And who knows, maybe a spot in the Pac-12 championship is on the line for USC in that game. We will see. Some other unranked opponents who won. Kansas beat number 18 Oklahoma State. It was a fun game there. They beat the Cowboys 37-16. You know, Mike Gundy, he's always had this program rolling. They're still a good team, but man, the Big 12, they just beat up on each other all the time. Mm-hmm. I think Lance Leopold, the head coach of the Kansas Jayhawks, he will be getting lots of looks for some of these bigger, major Power 5 programs as they are all looking for new head coaches because he's done a fantastic job with the Jayhawks here, a team that I think only won like 2 or 3 games last season. Unranked Pitt took down number 20 Syracuse. This is interesting to see here, and I want to look at this. Syracuse, they went into the Clemson game undefeated. They had beaten all the teams that they had played. They lose tight on the road to Clemson, 27-21. Then they get boat raced by Notre Dame, 41-24. And now they've lost to Pitt. So, you know, the classic, don't let one loss become two. Don't let two losses become three. It kind of feels like, you know, Babers here. He had a Syracuse team rolling. They took their first loss of the season against Clemson, and they've just allowed that to linger. They will play Florida State. Florida State is still a decent team, and Wake Forest. And then they will finish their season with Boston College. Unranked Michigan State beat number 16 Illinois. You know, there was a lot of drama surrounding the Michigan State program over the past couple weeks. Obviously, the incident that happened in the Michigan tunnel, we talked about that recently. Illinois now are 7-2 on the season. Brent Bielema, hey, he's still doing a fantastic job. Illinois, I think, still in the catbird seat there for the Big Ten East.
Yeah.
Big Ten East?
Yeah. Okay. Big Ten East.
So they still could have a shot at making it to the Big Ten Championship game, which would obviously be tremendous for the Fighting Illini. TCU, man, they're still rolling. They beat Texas Tech 34-24. Another come-from-behind win for TCU. That's sort of become their thing, right? First half, they get a deficit. They go in, they make all of the halftime adjustments that you would need to make to win. They come out, they incorporate those halftime adjustments, and they win. They are 9-0. I fully expect to see them in the Big 12 championship game. Now, interestingly, they will play number 24, Texas, this Saturday. TCU might slip up. And if you're an Alabama fan hoping to get a spot in the college football playoffs, you need Texas Christian to lose to Texas this weekend, because you cannot have an undefeated Texas Christian. They will most certainly get in.
They're probably going to play Texas twice this year, since there's no like divisions in the Big 12. So this is a big game. They have Baylor next week. I mean, TCU has to prove themselves. They still have a lot to prove.
Yes, I think that this will be an interesting matchup here this upcoming weekend between the Horned Frogs and the Texas Longhorns. Texas A&M, you know, we always like to poo-poo on Texas A&M. They've taken their fifth loss in a row. I think that's like the first time since 1980-something. Jimbo Fisher's in a lot of scrutiny, and he should be. I saw today five-star linebacker Anthony Hill, who's the top linebacker in the country, actually decommitted from Texas A&M. So, you know, a lot of these guys are getting paid a lot of money to go to Texas A&M, but I guess eventually the idea of losing six games in a season, even though you get paid a lot of money, is not that appealing to these ultimate competitors coming out of high school. Jimbo Fisher, you know, he talked bad about Nick Saban. He called him the college football czar. And when you poke fun and you make comments about the college football czar and you question his reputation, the football gods are going to put you in your place. And what have they done? Well, they've made it almost incredibly difficult for Jimbo Fisher to even make it to a bowl game. They're fighting for bowl eligibility, people. They've won three games. They have to win their next three against Auburn, UMass, and LSU. And we all know how good LSU is. So Jimbo Fisher may not make it to a bowl game this season. And that would certainly put him on the hot seat next season.
It's a little interesting that they definitely can win their next two. But LSU, that's the one that's going to be a trouble. But it's interesting that after all that's happened this year that Bama fans at the end of the season, you know, if LSU were to lose to Arkansas, are probably going to be rooting for the Texas A&M Aggies to win that game to give us a chance. Although that's a super unlikely. I just find that the karma and all of that is very funny.
Well, I wouldn't put it out the realm of possibility here, because if you're a Texas A&M Aggies fan, and more than likely you'll beat Auburn, you'll hopefully beat UMass, although at this point no game is a given for Texas A&M. that'll be their Super Bowl. You know, that'll be the game that will determine whether or not they make it to a bowl game. So if they are the team that they say that they are, and they are the competitors that they say they are, they will give every ounce that they have of energy to win that game. So again, that would require Texas or LSU, excuse me, to lose to A&M and I believe Arkansas. Mm-hmm. Although A&M does have two losses, so I'm not sure how that works out. We shall see. But you would have to have A&M beat LSU. So that'll be interesting to watch. That final weekend of college football is going to be fantastic. So I'm looking forward to it. Not that I want the season to be over, but it's going to be good. Number 24, Texas beat number 13, Kansas State. Listen, Texas, they've lost several games, but they're a young team. Young quarterback. This is his first year starting. I know Kansas State has the better record. They were ranked higher, but ultimately, sometimes it just comes down to who's got better players. Mm-hmm. And maybe even who's got better coaches. I mean, we forget C. Sarkisian's a phenomenal offensive mind. Mm-hmm. They will play, Texas will play TCU next weekend, so be sure to watch out for that one. Here's something interesting. Liberty beat Arkansas. Liberty is coached by Hugh Freeze. Now, why is this important? Why are we talking about a G5 team beating Arkansas? Well, Hugh Freeze is a potential candidate, and I think one of the top candidates for the Auburn coaching job. And I think that he should be considered heavily, if not be the first guy that they call. When you look at their record here, they are on the season 8-1. Their only loss coming to Wake Forest. And when you look at it, it was a 37-36 loss. I believe that was actually, end of regulation there, 37-36. So the Liberty Flames came incredibly close to beating a top 20 ranked Wake Forest, and at this point would have been 9-1. They play UConn, Virginia Tech, and New Mexico State. I see two easily winnable games there, and Liberty may win all three and end up 11-1 on the season.
Wow.
Hugh Freeze made some interesting comments after the game. He said something like, and I'm paraphrasing here, "Hey, listen, I don't know if Auburn wants me, but I win. And I've always done that no matter where I've been. I have a culture that I instill." So it was almost like he was broadcasting and televising, "Hey, Auburn, look at me. Look, I'm winning. I beat
the bag.
Yeah, I beat Nick Saban twice. I just beat Arkansas as the head coach at Liberty. Why don't you give me a call, Auburn? I would love to come be your head coach." And if I'm the Auburn Tigers, I think that'd be a great move.
That might be their guy.
Yeah, that would be a great move. Obviously, I would have preferred them just keep Brian Harsin as an Alabama fan. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they'll hire Bill O'Brien. You never know. But Hugh Freeze doing a great job there at Liberty. When you look at what he's done in terms of bowl games, I think he's like gone to three straight bowl games or something like that. Beat a top 25 Coastal Carolina in the COVID year in the Liberty Bowl, I believe. Something along those lines. I'm not entirely sure. All right, here's a quick rundown of the AP poll. Unfortunately, the College Football Playoff does not release until tomorrow, so we can't reveal to you what those new updated rankings are, but be sure to check those out wherever you get those rankings. But the AP poll here for this week, number one, Georgia, obviously. Number two, Ohio State. Number three, Michigan. Number four, TCU. This is a very likely playoff scenario here. We could be looking at our four playoff candidates rounding out here. We shall see. Number five, Tennessee. Number six, Oregon. I think they have a great shot of getting in if they go undefeated and win the Pac-12 championship. Number seven, LSU. Number nine, USC. Number eight, USC. Number nine, UCLA. And then finally at number 10, we have Alabama. Hey, 12-team playoffs looking pretty good right now. We'd still be in it. We'd still be in it. Number 11, Ole Miss. Obviously, if Alabama beats Ole Miss this weekend in convincing fashion on the road, Ole Miss ranked number 11. I think Alabama would have maybe a couple bumps up, maybe to number 9, maybe to number 8. We shall see. Depends on what happens with the rest, especially if TCU loses. Number 12, you see Clemson. So they fell 7 spots. I think we're finally realizing where Clemson ought to be, which is in that sort of top 15, but not top 10 range.
Yeah.
13, Utah. 14, Penn State. 15, North Carolina. And 16 is Tulane. Tulane will play UCF this weekend, by the way. That'll be an interesting matchup there. Tulane's doing some great things. They're 8-1. 17, you have North Carolina State. 18, you have Texas. Number 19, the aforementioned Liberty Flames. Number 20, you got Notre Dame. 21, Illinois. They fell 7 spots. 22, UCF. So it'll be 22 versus 16 there in that G5 matchup. Kansas State fell 10 spots to 23. Washington at 24. And Florida State at 25. All right, I've been Aiden McGuirk, joined by Ronell Foreman. Thank you so much for joining us on the student section. Be sure to check us out on WVUA90.7.com so you can listen to all of the student section shows. We talk about all things sports. Be sure to check out all of the Monday episodes to hear everything that me and Ronell have talked about throughout this season. We will see you next week.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.